This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, we'll hear about the world's largest wheelchair sports event taking place in Cincinnati this week. But first, Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters announced yesterday that he will not seek a third trial for former University of Cincinnati police officer Ray Tensing and the shooting death of Sam DeBose. Two previous trials on murder and manslaughter charges ended in hung juries. In both those trials, the prosecution argued Tensing's actions were unjustified. The defense says Tensing feared for his life and shot to stop the threat. The case has now been referred to the U.S. Attorney's Office for possible civil rights charges. Joining us to discuss the prosecutor's decision not to try Ray Tensing a third time are President of the Black Lawyers Association of Cincinnati, Donyetta Bailey, and Attorney Al Gerhardstein, who's been representing the DeBose family. You can join us, 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Donyetta and Al, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Al, what's been the reaction from the DeBose family? What do they think of this?
They are devastated. This has just been a really, really difficult decision for them to accept because we need to get it right. We had an opportunity to have a third trial. We should have had a third trial. The reasoning for not having a third trial makes no sense. Prosecutor Dieters claims that he can't get a conviction. Well, we don't know that because they haven't had a clean trial yet. The last trial was totally polluted by the testimony of Sergeant Hine. That was the homicide investigator, a member of the prosecution team, who volunteers in the middle of her testimony, when examined by the defense, that she thought at one point maybe the shooting was justified. Well, a jury hears that from a homicide investigator.
Now, did the judge tell him to disregard that testimony?
No, okay. The judge did not tell him to disregard it. And the prosecutor attacked, you know, had to turn on his own witness, and he's trying to cross-examine. But that's just one example of some of the errors in this trial. And I'm not placing blame. I'm just saying we had a chance to do it right and we could have fixed it. I mean, the admission of the marijuana. Ray Tensing didn't know anything about that marijuana in the car. That's only there to make you think poorly of Sam. And yet, we don't get to admit the T-shirt, which is a Confederate flag T-shirt. And we also don't hear clear testimony, although we knew it, about the pattern of his disproportionate enforcement of the law against blacks. He had the highest number of blacks that he stopped of all the UC officers. He pulled his gun more often than other UC officers. There's lots to say about this shooting that has never been fully presented. And we had a third chance to do it, and we didn't get to. And that's the family's, you know, devastated. It's just wrong.
Do you think a change of venue for any of these trials would have made any difference?
Everything I just said had nothing to do with the venue.
Okay.
I agree with Al. They asked me that several times. And my position is, it's not a change of venue you need. You need a fair judge. You need a prosecutor that gives adequate effort into the case. And you need a diverse jury pool. And I don't think moving that to another place in Ohio is going to get you those things. I think this case highlighted the fundamental flaws in our justice system. And we've seen across the country, no matter where these cases are tried, no matter how the facts are presented, people just cannot get over their explicit and sometimes implicit bias towards cops. And it's a shame.
Donyetta, Joe Dieters, as Al was saying, made the argument that he talked to several different jurors, and based on what he heard from them, he just didn't see any way that even with a third trial that he could win this case. What are your thoughts on that? Do you agree, disagree with that thinking?
No, because you assume that the 12 jurors, assuming that you talk to all 12 in this case, are going to be the same as the 800,000 plus people that we have in Hamilton County. So I don't understand the logic, especially when you watch the trial unfold and you see that there are things that happened in this case that didn't happen in the first trial that caused the jury to be hung again. So the last time the Confederate flag T-shirt was in, this time it was out. The marijuana, was in. The stuff that happened with Sam DeBose's fiance, there were a lot of things that happened in this trial that don't necessarily have to happen in a third trial. And I feel like that he gave up because he's not used to being on the side of adversity. He's used to going in there with a slam dunk case and winning with minimal effort. And this case actually requires a lot more than I think him and his office were prepared to give.
Donyette is absolutely right. And one of the things that you have to do, I try police misconduct cases on the civil side. And one of the things you have to do is educate the jury about the differences between a trained law enforcement officer who's literally trained to make split-second decisions in rapidly evolving situations. They go through scenario-based training so that they can do that. And it's not just putting yourself in Ray Tensing's shoes. It's what would a reasonable officer do in that situation? And the jurors need to be challenged to understand Ray's actions in light of what a reasonable officer would do, and they definitely needed more education about all the excellent training that is available, should have been done, that Ray probably had, that would have made it easier for him to decide to just step back from the car.
Do you think, Al, the murder charge was the correct charge in this case?
Sure. I think it was absolutely the correct charge, and I think the involuntary manslaughter was also a very solid charge. I think that it could have been revisited after the first trial and still be timely. I guess it wasn't done in a timely manner. But again, I think there's a lot that could be done to present the case more vigorously. That wasn't done. Hopefully the feds will do that next.
Yeah, and Donyette, what are your thoughts on that?
I think a lot of people are like, hey, why could they charge him with reckless homicide or negligent homicide? But people have to understand those don't apply when you claim that the act was intentional. Really, it didn't matter what he was charged with, because the defense that Ray Tensing is using applies regardless of that. So if the reason why the jury didn't convict and they were at a hung jury is because they really believed Ray Tensing's defense that he shot Sam DeBose to stop the threat, that belief won't change if it's reckless homicide. The defense still applies. So it doesn't matter what you charge him with. The issue comes down to, does the jury believe the thing that Ray Tensing said, that his arm was locked in his steering wheel, that he was being dragged 3 feet, or that 5 feet by the car, or that it was his perception that his life was in danger? If they believe that his perception that his life was in danger is correct, it doesn't matter what you charge him with, you're going to be back at the same spot. And I think people just didn't understand that.
Donyette, in a case where you're claiming you were defending yourself, who's the burden of proof on? Is it the person making the claim that they were defending themselves, or does the prosecution have to prove, no, they weren't defending themselves?
The burden of proof is on the defendant, Ray Tensing, to prove by preponderance of the evidence, so it's like 51%, that he did it to stop the threat and that he believed that he was in fear for his life.
So we have U.S. Attorney Ben Glassman now. He's saying that his office is going to review this case. So what could come out of this investigation, Al?
Well, it's good that Mr. Glassman's going to take a look at it. I hope he does it promptly. Here's what he's looking for. You can't just take a state law and then have the feds apply it. He has to apply federal law. And the federal law at issue is 18 U.S.C. Section 242, which is the federal criminal civil rights statute. And he has to show that Ray Tensing violated Sam DeBose's civil rights, that he did that willfully. He did it under color of law, and in the process, Sam was killed. And three of those things aren't that difficult. And that is, there's a clear Fourth Amendment violation here because there was excessive force. There was an unreasonable use of force. There's also a 14th Amendment violation, a violation of the Equal Protection Clause, because he discriminated against Sam DeBose by treating him differently because of his race, black. But he clearly acted under color of law as a police officer. He clearly killed Sam. He admitted it. And then the issue is, did he do all this willfully? And willfully can be defined as acting in open defiance or reckless disregard of a clear constitutional prohibition. And I think, given the dramatic evidence on race discrimination, the dramatic evidence on excessive force, that all of these issues are in play and that the feds should take this case up.
Yeah. Donyette, give us your thoughts on that too, please.
I agree with Al. I think it's certainly appropriate. And I think you have some stuff. I actually, though, would like to see some of the other things brought in to the decision. So, for example, there's other video footage to show Ray Tenzing's racial animus towards African Americans. The statistics that Al mentioned, you know, earlier about how he was overly aggressive and stopped more African Americans than any other cop on the force. Like, all of those things, you know, are what we call circumstantial evidence that I would like to see the U.S. Attorney's Office look at and consider when they make the decision. It has to be more than just the trial. And I'm hopeful a lot of people with these cases, they're looking for the smoking gun. They're looking for Ray Tenzing to use a racial slur or something like that. And a lot of times you don't have that. It's these little bit of nuggets and circumstantial evidence that you piece together to realize there's a civil rights violation. But I'm also concerned about whether or not the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Ohio is going to have complete autonomy and discretion to make the decision, or is there going to be interference from U.S. Attorney Jeff Sessions or from the president himself to try to block what I feel is a clear-cut civil rights violation.
Now, would the feds have more leeway? You're talking about other evidence that they could and things that they could delve into in the trial. Would they have more leeway? Would they have the ability to do that, Donyetta, as opposed to at the state level?
I asked that question to Al.
Yeah.
Well, I think they would, especially if they were trying to prove a case of race discrimination. I mean, that puts everything Donyetta was just talking about in play. And on behalf of the family, we have delivered to Attorney Glassman this morning a big packet of evidence that has not been used in the state case, including a whole bunch of text messages that were exchanged between Ray Tenzing and other people involved in a 2010 altercation he had where he used racial slurs or tolerated the use of racial slurs in communications with him. And we also submitted an expert report that demonstrated just how disproportionate his policing was. And I'm hopeful that because race could be front and center as one of the issues in a federal case, that a much broader range of evidence would get in.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and joining us to discuss the prosecutor's decision not to try Ray Tenzing a third time are president of the Black Lawyers Association of Cincinnati, Donyetta Bailey, and attorney Al Gerhardstein, who's been representing the DeBose family. You can join us, 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. So if this should go to trial at the federal level, how does that work? Would that be conducted in Cincinnati? Could be conducted anywhere in the country?
It would be in Cincinnati. The jury pool is most of Southern Ohio. I do a lot of work in federal court, and I get jurors from the Indiana border all the way to Portsmouth, and then south, including Butler County, Warren County, and then south from there. So it's a very broad geographical area that you draw jurors from, which means in reality that we get fewer blacks in federal juries than you even see in state court, which is a problem.
Does the federal government face a higher standard of proof in this type of a case?
It's a criminal case. So all their elements have to be proved by beyond a reasonable doubt.
Okay,
but so it's a different charge.
It's the same as at the state level.
That's
though.
Correct.
And just so I understand, go ahead, Donyetta.
Oh, I didn't have anything
yet. Oh, okay. So we're talking about Title 18 U.S.C. Section 242, and that's called deprivation of rights under color of law. So this is a way of holding state, federal, local officials accountable for violating people's civil rights? Is that?
Yes. It actually stems from the Reconstruction era, because when the Northern troops withdrew from the South after the occupation of the South at the end of the Civil War, there was nobody making sure that the normal legal structures in the South enforced the law on a fair basis. And in fact, they didn't. They were lynching blacks. They were abusing blacks. They were, just ignoring the rights of black people. So Congress passed these Reconstruction-era statutes that gave federal jurisdiction to those who had claims against state legal authorities because the state legal authorities weren't doing their job. And that's exactly why the law fits now, because the state has failed to preserve the rights of victims of Sam DuBose killing. And now we should have the feds step in and do the work the states didn't get done.
What's the track record of these types of cases?
Well, unfortunately, very few of them ever get brought. I mean, there's probably about 98% of the requests get turned down, and that's been true historically. But those that go to trial, the Rodney King officers, they were acquitted in state court, tried in federal court, convicted in federal court, and sentenced to a couple years each, which was a pretty light sentence. And then now we just had Michael Slagle plead guilty to federal civil rights violations in South Carolina after he had a mistrial in state court for shooting Mr. Scott. So, but then we have these other situations, like in Walter Brown in Ferguson, the feds chose not to prosecute. And John Crawford in Beaver Creek, the feds chose not to prosecute, nor did they prosecute in Tamir Rice or in Eric Garner. So we have a very, very mixed record. But I think this case fits it, and I think it's definitely worth fighting to get the feds to take it.
Yeah. Donyetta, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I think it's also interesting that it's my understanding that the feds requested to review the case. As opposed to the community asking. So I'm hopeful, maybe cautiously optimistic, that that means that they're going to look at it seriously and look at it a little different than the other cases that Al just mentioned.
That's a good point.
And Al, based on what we've seen in other police use of force cases around the country, how long would an investigation into whether this was a civil rights violation, how long do those usually take?
I wish I had better news for the family. I mean, the fastest I saw was Ferguson. The Michael Brown investigation, I think, was done in probably a little under a year. And others dragged on for a very long time. I mean, Crawford,
yeah, like
Crawford waited for 3 years.
Yeah. Years on the Beaver Creek case?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So if Ray Tensing were to be convicted of a civil rights violation, what kind of sentence might he face?
Well, actually, the statute permits the death penalty when you violate the civil rights of someone and kill them in the process. I've never seen that used.
I was going to say, how likely would that be to happen?
Yeah, I've never seen that used.
My understanding is there aren't too many people on federal death row.
No, there aren't. But so it means that the statute permits very stiff sentences, because anything less than that is also possible. So that would be up to the judge.
Donyetta, Joe Dieters, when he was giving his press conference yesterday, was talking about what an eye-opener this was for him, and just how divided the country is and how troubled he is by this division. You agree with him? What do you think of that statement?
I think it's true for him. It was an eye-opener for him. And my response is, welcome to the world of being an African-American in this country. Nothing that happened in this case and in this scenario is new to us. I just think for the first time, his eyes were open to it, because before this, it didn't affect him. So what I would have liked to have seen, though, is that he fought a little harder, or to hear him talk about the things that his office is going to do to make a change now that he sees the divisiveness. I would like to see more diversity in a prosecutor's office. I'd like to see more diversity on the police force. I'd like to see more diversity in the judges in Hamilton County, and a whole list of things that I think his office can do to help. So what I'm hoping is that he takes a minute, take a deep breath, and then marinate on those things and come back with some possible solutions to the problem.
I think that's a very astute observation. And this is a moment when, if Dieters does feel that strongly and remorseful about the racial divide in the criminal justice system, Donnie's absolutely right. I mean, there are plenty of things we're working on to fix this stuff across the board. The Ohio Supreme Court issued a racial fairness task force report in 2000, And it had all kinds of wonderful suggestions about creating equal justice for blacks that hadn't been implemented yet. We're still demanding that some of that get done, and a lot of that work has to be at the local level. Let's track sentencing by judge and see how blacks and whites fare for the same crimes. Let's see how the arrest rates compare. Let's see how who gets diversion and who doesn't. Let's see who gets bail and who doesn't. We have the capacity to get all this data, look at it, and see exactly where the problems are and tackle them. Let's do it.
So, Al, it sounds like what you're saying, though, is that the Tenzing case is just a microcosm or a reflection of all the problems that exist in the criminal justice system these days.
It certainly is a symptom.
Danya, did you?
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. I mean, I'm at the courthouse in both state and federal court all the time. And in my 17 years of practice, I've only had one African-American serve as a juror in any of my cases. We are literally down to Judge Melba Marsh as the only African-American judge on the common police court. And it's ironic, she was the first one over 30 years ago. That's an atrocity to me. Officer Hine was supposed to be the prosecution's witness. Officer Lyndon Schmidt and Officer Kidd were supposed to be the prosecution's witness. So my question to Joe Dieters is, okay, you didn't decide to do a third trial, but are you going to go to UC Police Department and demand that those two officers that testify basically against you, even though they were your witness, and ask for them to be fired? Are you going to join Alga Herzstein's complaint to the Cincinnati Police Department against Officer Hine? What else are you prepared to do now that you personally recognize the injustice that Al deals with and I deal with on a regular basis in our daily practice?
Now, UC's Vice President for Safety and Reform, Donyetta, Robin Engel, said that the three independent investigating agencies actually looked into the officers Kidd and Lyndon Schmidt and determined that they did not change their statements, engage in criminal behavior, or violate UC Police Department policy.
So I talked to Dr. Engel, and she said, but in light of their new testimony at the trial, which was different than what they said during the investigation, they're going to relaunch it now that the case is over. Because I highlighted for her as a labor and employment attorney, I watched what they said before the trial started and what they said in the trial, and their blatant falsehoods that they admit that they gave. To me, it's a problem when an officer says, oh, I saw this, and then they come to court and say, oh, I never saw that. I admit that I was just repeating what Ray Tinling said. And I told her, as an employment lawyer, I don't buy that what they did was not a violation of their job duties. And so she promised me that the UC Police Department was going to revisit that once this trial is over. So for me, that's first order of business, like today.
Now, this has split the community, Al, as it has in other towns where these kinds of things have happened. What do you think of the reaction so far that we've had in Cincinnati?
I think it's been very measured, and I applaud all those who stay supportive of the family and who continue to seek justice. But I also think that we only earn that measured and peaceful response by delivering actions on our commitments to do right. And supporting the federal prosecution, picking up the crusade to do more racial fairness across the board in the criminal justice system, not accepting in the way that Dieter seems to be, that you just can't do anything if white people won't convict an officer who kills a black guy. I mean, we need to name it, call it out, and continue to take actions like the ones we've been talking about that will bring greater racial fairness to the whole region. And unless we do that, we can't expect to earn these peaceful responses. I mean, we got to deliver.
And even though the collaborative agreement applies to the Cincinnati police, I'm wondering just how much of an impact you think that's had in helping to keep things peaceful.
Well, hopefully it reflects processes, at least at the city level, that people can have some faith in. But even that, we've had some relapses. We've stopped tracking the racial composition of our traffic stops by officers. That's outrageous. We need to get back to that. The city manager says we're going to get back to it. We're doing a whole collaborative refresh right now where this police department is reviewing their compliance with all the collaborative terms. And then our old monitor, Saul Green, is back on the job to review those and make sure that we're honoring the commitment we made when we first entered into the collaborative. That's all good. And we won't really have the results until early next year because we're in the process of doing the work right now. But while you mention it, I do want people to fill out the collaborative perception survey. It's, I don't know, do you still have it on your website?
Yeah, we will somewhere. Yes.
So there is a survey where people can indicate their experience with the police and their hopes and dreams and concerns for the police. It's called a community perception survey, and I hope everybody fills it out because it'll help us as we continue to make the collaborative vital and important to the city.
And Donyette, I wanted to get your final thoughts, in particular about how you think the community has reacted to this.
I think they're all in shock, and they've yet to react. I think they're looking for the civil rights leaders in our city and in our county to guide them on what to do. And I think that's important because we normally don't have that. But I don't think everybody's just going to go back to work business as usual. I think the situation in the United States as a whole has gotten so far out of control that people want to do something, and they're looking for us to tell them what to do. And my response to that is we're probably going to tell them, I'd like to see a petition that we're able to send to the U.S. Attorney's Office to let them know that we really do want you to find civil rights violation against Ray Tinsley and seek justice. Don't let it stop with no third trial. And then I think people really do need to pay attention to the collaborative. It's an agreement, but you have to make sure that the city is honoring it. And I kind of play the game on the city of Cincinnati for us being in this predicament, because I really feel like before they gave the UC Police Department the authority to patrol outside of their jurisdiction, as a part of the collaborative, they should have notified MAC, they should have notified Al, they should have notified the Black United Front as a class representative, and they should have had the early warning system in place and be monitoring UCPD. Had they done that, they would have realized how out of control Ray Tinsley was, and we might not be here. So for me, I'm also going to push back to the city and say, hey, there's blame or responsibility there for you. And what are you also going to do in addition to Deers, in addition to the feds, to try to facilitate change so we're not in this predicament going forward? There's blame to place on everybody, and there's reform that needs to be done on everybody, not just UCPD, not just Joe Deers' office, not just the judges, but also the city of Cincinnati.
Well, Alan Donyetta, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
President of the Black Lawyers Association of Cincinnati, Donyetta Bailey, and attorney Al Gerhardstein, who has been representing the DuBose family. And coming up, we'll hear about the 37th National Veterans Wheelchair Games that are happening in Cincinnati this week. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.